obsessed with all things ovine, there is seriously something about sheep and always something new to learn about keeping, breeding and farming them. Welcome to the Sheep Show podcast. I'm Jill Noble from Holston Valley Farm and Sheep Stud and your host. The Sheep Show podcast exists to help you, no matter where you are in the world, what sheep you breed, what size your flock is. This podcast will help your sheep knowledge and your shepherding confidence grow. And it's a two-way street. I love to hear from you and find out how your sheep journey is going. Contact me via Instagram at Holston Valley Farm or via email jill@holstonvalleyfarm.com.au. Come along on this episode as we explore the amazing world of sheep and sheep farming together. Something very different today for an episode of the Sheep Show podcast, exceptionally different, something that will get you inspired, bring out your creative juices, and also we're going to talk about sheep too, of course. So today I have got two amazing artists with me, musicians, if you like, Elizabeth and Ryder, and they have a band called the Dust Bowl Fairies in the eastern coast of America. And we're going to learn a little bit about their band and what inspires them, and also the impact that animals have on Liz and Ryder. So welcome, Liz and Ryder, to the Sheep Show podcast.
Thank you so much. This is so exciting to be here on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks so much for having us.
Oh, Liz, that's great. No, it's lovely. Really, really lovely. And it's a definite a treat for the listeners to get some, people like you who've got this amazing talent for writing songs and performing songs and then bringing animals into that music. So let's hear a little bit about your background, first of all, and the farm and animal experiences. Then we'll hear about the music. So we might start off with Liz, please. Tell us a little bit about you, your background, and animal and farming.
Sure. I'm someone who wears a lot of hats. I'm a musician. I play multiple instruments, but in the Dust Bowl Fairies, I play the bass, the electric bass. And I also work as an environmental educator. And I'm also a farmer. And so I guess my whole life I've really loved animals. I think in some ways I relate better to animals than I do to humans. So I have pets at home. Right now I have four cats and my dog died a few years ago. So I'll probably be looking forward to getting a puppy soon. And then throughout my adult life, I've cared for a whole range of livestock, from horses to cows, to sheep, to chickens. And I've also spent a lot of time observing wildlife through my job. And I volunteered for licensed wildlife rehabilitators before. So I've cared for wildlife as well. So that's kind of my background and how I ended up on this show.
I love it. Thanks, Liz. Great stuff. And you have sheep at the moment, don't you?
I do, yes. So I have, my husband and I have a small farm that we started as more of a homestead for growing our own food in reaction to the more industrial agriculture that we have here in the United States, and wanting to have a more sustainable way to have our food. But we've also, for about a decade, we marketed our sheep are Icelandic. And so they are actually used for meat, for milk, and for wool. And so we marketed grass-fed lamb, wool, and we never actually really got into the milking them, although I worked for a sheep dairy for a time, as well as pasture poultry. So we raised and marketed a whole bunch of products for about a decade. But over the past few years, we've pulled back. As you know, Jill, livestock take a lot of time and the animals always come first. So I'm actually able to spend more time on music now, sort of going back to the homestead sort of life instead of marketing.
Right stuff. Wow. I mean, we talk about dual purpose sheep all the time, but you know, a triple purpose sheep is just amazing. But you're right though. I mean, and with that, you've got a responsibility and investment, and it takes time.
Yes, and you know, here we're in the northeastern part of the United States, and so the climate is pretty cold. So the Icelandic sheep are extremely hardy, having lived in Iceland for thousands of years or 1,000 years or so. So they do really well on pasture. We have a grass based system, so they're not eating a lot of grain. They're eating hay in the wintertime and grass in the summer. So they're able to roam and forage, and they seem to be quite content.
Yeah. They remind me very much of my sheep, but with wool, because they've got the horns.
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
Very much so.
Yeah, the Northern European short-tailed sheep. I thought your sheep looked very, very much like mine. So
yeah.
Do your sheep have colors?
No.
Do you have colors, or are they mean?
Funny enough, though, there is a local breeder quite close to me who has bred a black variety of Wilshire horns. Mm. They're not Wilshire horns, but they're like, you know, Blackshires, Luxton Blacks, he calls them. So there is something in there, but not the browny, fawny color that you get in your Icelandic sheep. Not at all. Mm-hmm. Wow, amazing. They really do look spectacular. Really good. Thanks, Liz. Great stuff. And Ryder, what sheep do you have, Ryder?
Well, all right. I've got one sheep with me at all times, not at all times, but sort of spiritually, I would say Hazel is with me a lot, and Hazel's with the band a lot. Hazel is a taxidermy ram. The head, we don't know what happened to Hazel. You know, we obviously didn't decapitate the animal, but I found Hazel in a salvage company in Albany and sort of rescued Hazel from the salvage company, where Hazel was like mounted on the wall. And then Hazel basically started, I brought Hazel in because I wanted Hazel to play the role of a Pyrenean ibex in a musical kind of show I was doing about extinct animals. And of course, Hazel is a Barbados black belly sheep, so doesn't look like an ibex at all. But you know, it was all kind of theater, you know. So so anyway, Hazel played the role of the Pyrenean ibex in this project called Ex Malia: Songs of Extinction. And then when we wrapped up the project, Hazel basically told me that we should have a band together. So Hazel really started the Dust Bowl Fairies, and you know, one by one we've brought in other human members. Hazel's every once in a while we'll have a deer.
Yes.
Come in, but it's mostly Hazel in terms of like the animals in the band. And I'll put Hazel on my body, and the idea there is that it's like I'm offering Hazel my body in Hazel's afterlife. And then, you know, this all ended up with me sort of having this taxidermy animal rescue at my house. So I've got a lot of taxidermy animals because people are throwing them away a lot now, which just, you know, it's kind of, especially the ones where they've cut the head off, it's a little bit disturbing to me. Sometimes, you know, it could be like roadkill or something where somebody stuffs the animal, and that's, I don't know, that I don't have a problem with that, but the sort of trophy aspect of it is pretty disturbing. And people are just now throwing out all these taxidermy left and right because nobody wants them anymore. And where we live in New York, it's the Adirondacks, and especially deer. It's big deer hunting territory. So I've ended up with a lot of taxidermy animals, and we have this taxidermy animal rescue here. And so Hazel's not alone. Hazel has a lot of friends throughout the house. But I, in addition to Hazel, I do a lot of like animal advocacy, and I work with rescued animals. I've been working with rescued farm animals the last couple of years. So there are some sheep who I work with, living sheep and donkeys and goats and chickens and roosters and alpacas and all those fun creatures. And then I also do a lot of animal caretaking just for like household animals, like more domesticated animals, dogs and cats and rabbits. And, so anyway, there's a lot of animals in my life. Yeah.
Great stuff. Right. And you're primarily a musician when, as well as the volunteer carer for the animals.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's hard to make a living as a musician, so I have some side hustles, but and the animal caretaking, but music's the main thing in my life that I'm passionate about. I would say it's my career.
Yeah.
And Dust Bowl Fairies started in 2014, and so we've been going for a while, and Liz has been in the band since 2017 or 18, probably. Do you remember, Liz?
I think 18.
2018. So, yeah, the band survived the pandemic, and we're all still together. It's a 5-piece band.
And how would you describe the music writer that the Dust Bowl Fairies play and write?
Well, you know, it's always changing over time. And I describe it as dark carnival dream music. So it's the lead instrument is the accordion. Very interesting mixture of instruments. I also play the saw, a musical saw. So, which, you know, has been played in like Europe and Eastern Europe, and also, here, in the United States, in sort of, like some folk music. And then we have a lap steel player, lap steel guitar. Liz plays the electric bass. We have an acoustic guitar player, and we have a drummer. So it's pretty eclectic and unique, and it has a lot of Balkan music and Eastern European folk music. There's a lot of influence from like klezmer music of the Jewish people, and but, you know, there's a lot of other sort of like, I don't know, there's all kinds of influences. Like there's a little bit of like Latin influence in the music as well. And we've been doing a much more like up-tempo version last few years. I think especially in a sad song right now because it's you know, we've all been through so much, and New York was, you know, hit. New York had a really Can we go on and on?
Sorry about that. I think
do
it
you
was
think
just
that
my end.
Do you know? Do you know?
Yeah. Did you get any of that? I was really rambling on and on.
No, so. I heard up to you telling about just how New York was impacted.
Yeah.
Survived the pandemic. Yeah. Cool. Great stuff. Yeah, lovely. That's really interesting because when I listened in, I was trying to think, oh, what sort of music is this? You know, and I was listening to your early stuff and then some of your more recent stuff that, you know, you've got an album that you've just launched recently.
Yeah, so the new album is called Carnival Dust. It's very collaborative group of songs. It's an EP, so it's six songs, and there's a lot of dark humor throughout all the songs, a little bit of tongue-in-cheek, like they're very playful, and it's really, the music has really like kept me going through this time of just, you know, getting together with the musicians in the band. And when we practice, we really have a good time, you know, and it's like a really nice release. And then we find the same thing at the shows. Like, it's very cathartic, you know, music, and it really brings people together. So I would say the new EP, it really reflects that, songs that are very playful and, you know, pleasant and enjoyable. But if you also listen closely, there's like, you know, some content in there, some political content, and definitely some dark humor.
Yeah, it's, and this newer approach, a newer sort of style, it's quite different to the style you had before, or the, as you say, it's sort of quite, it's evolving, isn't it? Your music sounds to me like it's very much evolving.
Yeah. I mean, that's the fun thing as an artist, I don't know how some people just get one thing and they do it their whole life. Maybe do that if you're making a lot of money, which we're not. So the good thing about not making a lot of money is you can be more creative and do whatever you want.
Great stuff.
Yeah, we have been taking it more in the up-tempo direction. We do have a drummer, so that's also, you know, been a contributing factor. Andrew Stein is a really great percussionist, and he also just... we had a more kind of like a circus drum kit before that was not a full drum kit. And he's recently switched over to a full drum kit. So it's definitely a little bit more rockin' than it used to be. I can't write a sad song right now. I just can't do it. And a lot of my earlier material was like really moody, you know? Yeah. So there's definitely been a shift. And I would say we were already moving in this direction, you know, pre the pandemic. And then we've just, you know, it just feels right.
That's right. I love that. That's great. So I'm interested, have the animal influences changed then over time? Do you, because I, from what I could understand, I could see and hear a lot more of the animal influences in the earlier music. So is there still an animal influence now in this more upbeat sound, this carnival sound?
Yeah, I mean, I know for myself, I always have a delay. So like I lived and worked at a cat rescue for 3 years, and the whole time I was there, I could not, people kept asking me, when are you going to start writing songs about cats? And I was like, I can't. There's cats, there was like hundreds of cats there. And I was like, I'm so over my head with cats that I can't make art about cats. I can't write songs about cats. But now cats, now that it's been a couple years, you know, away from that, cats have definitely been drifting in. So on the new EP, it's not an animal heavy group of songs by any means, but in the song that's called The Changeling, the second verse of it is all about a polydactyl cat. So that's the cat with the five thumbs, or like the five finger, or whatever you call them, toes. So the polydactyl that has the extra thumb, and they really look cool. You know, they look like almost more like a wild cat because their paws are huge. And I've had, you know, there was a bunch of polydactyl cats at the rescue. And then I take care of a bunch of outdoor cats as well. And there was this polydactyl cat who we called Thumbs, who, you know, produced a lot of kittens around the neighborhood. So then we had all these polydactyl kittens. So anyway, we do have the cat in the changeling, and cats, I would say, have been like drifting into the songs now that I have a little bit of space. And now that I'm at the farm animal sanctuary, I imagine, you know, like once I can get like my head out of the thick of it, there'll probably be some songs about donkeys and goats and sheep.
Isn't that really interesting? You know, so you've had a time to reflect, and then you can sort of, you can find that creative outlet. Go for it, Liz.
I was going to say that one of my favorite tunes on the EP, it's named for an animal, but not a cat. It's called Cuckoo. And so I guess inspired by the cuckoo bird, the cuckoo clock was inspired by the cuckoo bird, and the cuckoo clock features pretty prominently in the song, as well as, you know, maybe some people who are acting a little cuckoo as well.
Love that.
The cuckoo's a really fun song, right? And I think, like, isn't the cuckoo bird one who like imitates? So it can kind of make you a little bit mad because it can imitate other birds. That's what I've always heard about it. So I think that that's maybe like the origin of that term. You know, you're going cuckoo because that those kind of birds can probably drive other birds insane, and people create it's kind of a nutty bird, you know?
Yeah. Wow. Interesting. Great stuff. So the animal influence sort of morphs along and comes out whenever it's right, whenever the time is right for you.
Yeah.
So writer, you do most of the songwriting and the composing. Is that right?
For the band, I do. Liz is also a songwriter and composer, and someday maybe we'll do one of her songs. She has a really great song about crows that I'm hoping that we can do, and we made a video for it maybe a year or so ago with trapeze and this circus trick that Liz does called the Rolla Bola. So we have a lot of kind of circusy influence in the band. Yeah. So, but you know, for Dust Bowl Fairies, I do most of the songwriting. The band does really, they all write their own parts. I don't tell them what to play. Sometimes I have an idea, you know, it's like a sound I'm going for, but for the most part, I let people, you know, I like to see what people are going to come up with. If it's not quite, you know, working, then we'll, you know, we'll work on it back and forth and figure out something. But yeah, the different musicians pretty much come up with their own parts, and sometimes they help with the arrangement of the songs too. I have a really hard time with endings, so the band really helps with endings a lot. And just like the structures of the songs.
Amazing. And Elizabeth, when you're writing your songs, even though they're not necessarily for the Dust Bowl Fairies, is there an animal influence there creeping in to inspire you?
Oh yeah, absolutely. So like Ryder was saying, the song that she refers to was about a deer that died in the woods across the street from my house. And it was like this huge party of crows and ravens. And that at the end of winter, you know, eating the carcass. And it was really a raucous scene for several days, which inspired that particular song. But then I'm also really, really interested in animal sound and animal communication. So I will often use the sound of animals in my songs themselves, like whether it's walruses make a certain sound that sounds kind of like tapping that I've used in the percussion section of a song by, you know, electronically manipulating it. Or, you know, frogs in the chorus or things like that. So often either natural sound or concern for the environment are themes in my songs.
Yes. Yeah. And I'm glad. Go for it, Ryder.
Elizabeth has a podcast called Echolocation. So you can hear some of that. Well, maybe some of your own compositions, but it's a little also just like an exploration, right, of animal communication.
Yes. Yeah. Like Ryder said, my podcast is called Echolocation, and it focuses sort of on two things. One is the scientific study of animal communication, which is called bioacoustics, and then environmental sound art. So people who are making art from the sonic landscape. And often that's the natural soundscape, but I recently had a show that focused on this composer who wrote a whole album by playing parts of a bridge, like a big bridge that spans a river. He actually played it and recorded all these sounds that he liked from playing it, and then composed many songs. So it's really fun.
Great stuff. Because I know we talked about animals here quite a lot, but there is a sort of a broader message, isn't there, in a lot of your music around animal advocacy, ecosystems, preservation, nature, all those sorts of elements. So there's a bigger scheme of things.
Mm-hmm. And it's not, you know, so literal. It's you know, there's like, it kind of drifts in and out of the music and the lyrics in terms of influence, but we're just so passionate about animals and ecology and the environment. And, you know, Liz and I are very concerned about the environment and, you know, very interested in living sustainably. Liz has like taken it to an extreme and really lives out on the land. And I'm a village girl, but, it's something that we think about a lot, and it's something that we have together, you know, in common together. And it's always really nice to have, I don't know, allies, I guess, because it, you know, can get very hard and depressing, at least where we live. It's getting a little bit better, I would say, in the United States, because things are getting really bad environmentally. And so people are starting to wake up a little bit, I think. But look, like if we trash the earth, animals live there, you know, we're trashing everything. We have to take care of the land, because it's not just about people, you know, plants and animals are living there, and they're more, well, you know, you both know, because you take care of animals, like they're drinking the water and eating the plants that are coming right out of the earth. And so if there's toxic stuff in the ground or toxic stuff in the air, they're going to be ingesting it. And it really affects animals so much.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And I mean, yeah. I guess just to bring it back to farming, one of the beautiful things about a grass-based system where you're pasturing your animals is that it's so much better for the quality of life of the animal itself, of the domestic animal that you're raising, versus like a feedlot where they're confined and maybe eating grain all the time, but also, you know, having pasture land creates habitat or maintains habitat for all sorts of animals in a way that there's not a lot of disturbance to the land. And so it, to me, it's really an approach that takes into account many factors and has a lot of benefits as an approach to farming, and a traditional approach that I think it's great that people are going back to.
Because I did some work with my day job in Germany, and this beautiful countryside that we were driving through, and I said to Gary, my husband, and I said, where are all the animals? Like, this is gorgeous countryside, but where are all the animals? And I asked the people I was there to sort of work with, and they said, no, they're in sheds, they're inside. So is that what it's like, or is that what it's been like around your area where it's been more industrialized, and particularly with sheep?
I mean, Liz might, I'm interested to hear what Liz would say. I think there is a lot, because we're a couple hours north of New York City, there is a movement of like small farming that's kind of coming back. There's a lot of people interested in having animals and having small farms. But my sense is that you don't see a lot of just like small farms and groups of animals, and you know, you can in the United States, depending on where you are, drive by. There's these parts of the Midwest where you're just driving for miles and it's just like cows, and mostly cows. It's a beef country, you know. But animals just like squashed together. You can't roll the window down. It just smells so badly. And they're just like very, very industrial, and not, you know, not good for the earth or the animals, clearly. And I'm sure they're feeding them all kinds of antibiotics and hormones. And then, you know, we see those animals show up at the animal sanctuary for rescued animals, and they have a really hard time because they've been genetically altered and, you know, fed all kinds of like horrible chemicals and antibiotics, and they're fed with like grains to just make them as like fat as possible, so fat that their bodies can't hold them up anymore. And so fortunately, this is the sheep show, and I think sheep kind of get off the hook a little bit in this country. What would you say, Liz?
Yeah, I think, I mean, certainly sheep are not as common as they used to be here in the U.S. It used to be a really common livestock animal, and was common on every farmstead, but it's there are sheep farms in New York State, and I'd say there's a range. I think mostly it's small farmers like me who are don't have a huge flock. It's very challenging to make a living or to make ends meet, farming in general, but particularly if you're trying to produce wool now. And even, you know, lamb is it's a specialty product. Certainly in the US, as Ryder said, it's beef country.
You just don't have the culture of eating lamb as much, perhaps, as you might have in Europe or Australia. It's different.
Yeah, I lived in England on and off as a kid, and there was definitely, you know, a lot of sheep farming there, and people ate lamb a lot in England. But yeah, I don't think they really don't very much here in this country.
But
and
yet,
they want to eat, you know,
over 50% of my listeners in the Sheep Show podcast are in the US. So it's amazing.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah. It's huge.
It's a big place.
It's a big place. It is a big place. Yeah. It is a big place.
And that's good. That's good to know that there are plenty of sheep farmers.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, whatever. Yes, yeah, all right.
Where do you have a sense of, like, in the United States, through the podcast, do you have a sense of, like, are there locations where there are more density?
Yeah, so down from, I suppose, the Midwest, so Wisconsin, Minneapolis, those sorts of locations in particular. Mm. So down there. And then I think there's actually quite a few listeners in California as well. So but I'll have a look actually, and just have a quick look while we're on, and sort of see where, even just in the last the last couple of, I can. It's quite the podcast tool I use is quite detailed in terms of location. Yeah, so Seattle. There's quite a few in Seattle. Hey to anyone in Seattle. Alberta, Illinois, Maryland, Oklahoma, Texas, Ohio, Minneapolis, which I knew, California, San Francisco, Missouri, North Carolina, Indiana. Gee, is there anywhere? I could go Florida even. Florida.
Wow. Yeah. Florida. I don't know if a sheep would be very happy in Florida.
Do you know where St. Petersburg in Florida? I have got someone who is listening to a lot of episodes in St. Petersburg in Florida. I don't know where that is, but yeah. It's amazing. Ohio, New Jersey, Oregon, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Alabama. Yeah, Pennsylvania again, more Tallahassee, Florida. Yeah, it's cool actually looking through all these locations. Kentucky. Yeah. Wow. Who knew?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, hi, everybody there in the US.
Yeah, exactly. Hi to everyone who's listening in all those locations.
At least people.
Especially,
who
right. Yeah. Sorry, Liz.
Just one of my dearest friends lives in Perth. Can I give her a shout out?
Please do.
Deb Monteith, I miss you so. I love you, Deb.
Do you think Deb would be listening to the Sheep Show podcast? Is she into sheep at all?
Yes, I do. No, but I'm going to tell her she has to listen now.
Oh, good. Oh, that's good. Oh, hey, Deb. Follow me on Facebook too, Deb. Why not? that's so nice. So good. Now I know, so talking of sheep, I know we met Hazel earlier on. Hazel like travels with you, Ryder, right? Like Hazel appears quite frequently. Is that right? Like
Hazel comes to almost all of the shows that we do, and then Hazel's also in a lot of our videos. So if people are curious about Hazel, you can see Hazel in the Dustbowl Fairies videos. We just released one video called Lost in Time that Hazel is in, and Hazel has like a cameo in it, and it's the video for the song that's on the EP, Lost in Time. And there's another new video that came out for one of our older songs, Cyanide Hotel. And Hazel is in that video as well. And I'm actually, you know, because Hazel's on my body a lot, you can see what that looks like in Cyanide Hotel. In both, really, you can see Hazel herself, and then Hazel being a part of my body.
So you got the accordion on the front and Hazel in a little backpack almost on the back.
Yeah, it's a heavy load.
Wow.
But they're actually kind of balanced with their weight.
Great, so, yeah.
Fortunately.
How heavy is Hazel?
It's your workout.
Hazel, the accordion that I play is around 20 pounds. So Hazel's, I haven't weighed Hazel, but I think Hazel's probably similar.
Yeah.
I don't think Hazel's actually 20 pounds. Maybe. Yeah. I don't know.
And 15 maybe. Yeah. Good weight for a Hazel. Do people ask about Hazel, like when they see her, like, could you bring her to performances and shows and things? Do you know, can people touch her or him? It's kind of, I know it's around, but you put little eyelashes. So I get very gender confused here with Hazel.
Yeah. Well, I'm really into the gender confusion. So that's definitely something that's intentional. Gender blurring, yes. Sort of androgyny or non-binary, representing that in the band is fun for me as a person who's, you know, queer identified. And people do, there's a lot of different reactions that Hazel gets, especially depending on the location. Like if Hazel's in New York City, people are shocked, you know, sometimes they're scared. Sometimes dogs are scared of Hazel and bark at Hazel. Cats don't care. Cats like Hazel. Sometimes people want to touch Hazel, and then it kind of depends if they're, you know, I don't want people groping any of my band members. So, but you know, some people can, you know, you have to feel it out. Like if people seem like a lot of our audience members are interested in a sort of, I don't know, mythology and the occult and things like that. So those people are welcome to come up and meet Hazel, but we don't want any sort of like, I don't know, like deer hunters coming up and getting gruff. So,
but, Hazel's, you know, not some for people sale.
Hazel's not for sale. People do get confused. Like some of the animal activist people get confused.
Yes.
Like, why do you have a taxidermy animal in the band? And so it's, you know, it's not for everyone, and it's really meant as more like symbolic, like this re-embodying this taxidermy animal, giving the animal a good afterlife. It's more having to do, I would say, with like some of the more like Native American, American Indian traditions, or traditions in different like folk cultures where there's like and honoring the animal, or like working with the spirit of an animal, or working with an animal energy. So that's where I approach the relationship with Hazel from. It's not about like fetishizing taxidermy.
Yeah. Wonderful. That's good. I think that would help anyone who is confused or perhaps, you know, just doesn't quite understand the role, you know, the role that Hazel has. Yeah, amazing. Great stuff. Liz, do you have any mascots that you bring with you when you go playing and performing?
Just my bass.
Yeah, just your bass. I love it. The most important thing.
Yep.
You're a simple girl. You're a simple girl.
That's right. Pretty straightforward.
Oh, I love it.
I've asked Liz if we could go, you know, if like her sheep could be in some of our photos or videos, and Liz has said that would not be a good idea.
Because
my impression is they're just they can be cantankerous and their big personalities. Is that true, Liz?
That is. And also, I mean, when you talk about, you know, I have my own thoughts about animals and their own agency. And I'm pretty sure I know my sheep pretty well. And they are, of course, domestic animals, but they're a little wild, and they don't really love people that much. Mm-hmm. I mean, they like me, but would be sort of putting them on the spot and putting them through it. Yes, exactly. Putting them through an ordeal.
Yeah, fair enough.
And I don't think they, honestly, I don't think they particularly want to be in a video. So if I had really I thought would enjoy that I would think differently, but I know my animals well, and it would be an ordeal for them.
Yeah. Is that an Icelandic thing, do you think, Elizabeth? You know, how would you describe the Icelandic sheep in terms of their sort of personality?
I do think it is characteristic of the breed that they're not super docile. They don't really fit that pattern that people think of with sheep being very, very docile and easy to control. They're headstrong, and they will attack a dog rather than the dog attacking them. The dog gets my dog used to, she would come in to the barnyard with me, but she was always very wary, and she would never, you know, let them get too close because they are horned sheep, and they the ewes are horned. Yes. And you know, they won't hesitate to assert themselves.
Yes, my sheep are exactly the same with depends on the dog, though. They either sort of are intrigued by the dog and want to go and investigate. But if it's a big dog that they think, I don't know, I just don't understand you, they will stomp their feet and they will go for the dog. In fact, I've seen one like full on, like one of those Bernese mountain dogs, like just go for it.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, you think, whoa, gee, this, it was quite a timid dog, but the sheep thought, yeah, I can take you on.
Yeah, and I mean, I've definitely known people who, they have guardian dogs, like Maremmas or Great Pyrenees. And the sheep will live happily with the dogs that they know, but it's just that, you know, we think about sheep running from dogs, and that's not the personality of the Icelandics at all.
Yeah, and I guess they've got that Viking in them, and they've got that hardiness in them, and that's what you're going to get. You're going to get that assertion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Amazing. We have some show-off sheep at the sanctuary. Which is called Andhof Animal Sanctuary, by the way. If anybody's curious, it's ANDHOF Animal Sanctuary. I did make a video with some of those animals, and it's called Loon Lake. It's for our song Loon Lake. So you can find that video on the Dustbowl Fairies YouTube channel and see some of the sheep at the animal sanctuary.
Yeah. And can, with both of the work that both of you do, you know, if someone was wanting a new pet or wanting perhaps to get an animal friend, what would you suggest to them?
I mean, Liz might know more specifically about, sheep, but I mean, there are so many animals that don't have homes, like at the animal sanctuary, they all have too many animals. So, you know, sometimes they're older animals, sometimes they're animals with injuries. And so it depends. If you want to have an animal as a pet, I think, you know, there's so many options. If you really are wanting to have an animal that's productive, then you probably go to more like a breeder, but there's animal sanctuaries everywhere, and some of them do adopt out animals. So I would definitely say that that's a great place to start if you're willing to take an animal that might need a little care.
Yeah, I love that. That's really good. Thank you. And Liz, where did you buy your Icelandic sheep from? Do they come from a breeder?
I actually didn't buy them. I worked at a sheep dairy here in we're in the Hudson Valley in New York State. Mm-hmm. And part of my payment for working there was bred ewes.
Cool.
And then I know you offer stud service because it worked out well for us for a time, because the farm that we worked that I worked at would also breed our sheep for us each year until we had our own rams.
Love it. Great stuff. Yeah.
And I mean, I think what I would say about having animals, whether it's livestock or whether it's animals like cats and dogs that you have in your house, it's really a lifelong commitment. And to me, and I know that you know this, Jill, just from farming, the animals come first. You know, it's like their needs are always top of mind. And most important. I think it's always good when you enter into any kind of relationship to think about the longevity of it. And, you know, animals live a long time. And so being sure you really want to do the commitment is important if you're thinking about getting an animal.
Yeah, I think that's good advice. That is good advice.
It's expensive.
For sure. So I'm thinking for particularly Ryder, for you, for the sanctuary, a lot of those animals are looked after based on donations that people would make.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's basically no income for the sanctuary unless, you know, some of them are good at getting grants. And then others of them, like Andhof, are smaller sanctuaries where they're just taking care, you know, they don't have time. They don't have a big staff of people like grant writers. So they're just busy taking care of the animals. So it's pretty much all donation to support those animals.
And if someone wanted to make a donation to Andhof, where would they go to make a donation to support those animals and the work that they do?
You can go onto the Andhof Animal Sanctuary website, and there is a page that of the website that's for donating.
Great stuff. I'll pop that in the show notes as well. Great stuff.
Yeah.
So it's a non-for-profit. Yeah, absolutely.
Tax deductible, and you can make just one deposit. You can make one donation, or you can do a monthly donation where you basically like sponsor an animal, which is a really good thing.
Yeah, so gifts and things. Yeah, I love it. Great stuff. So, is there much promotion going on with the new album? Can people come and see you? And you mentioned the YouTube channel. I'll pop that in the show notes as well. But if someone wanted to see you and meet Hazel potentially, where would they go? What's your gig schedule like coming for the next couple of months?
Well, mostly we play in the Northeast, US. So our next show is at the end of the month of March. It's March 30th, and it's in Woodstock, New York, at a really nice music club called The Colony Woodstock. So that's our next full band show. Sometimes we have little outbreak like duet shows and trios, but you can find all of the show listings on our website and social media pages. And the secret key to finding Dustbowl Fairies in the virtuals is the spelling of fairies is Old English, so it's F-A-E-R-I-E-S. It's not the Disney spelling. It's the old, old English spelling. So we have, you know, a Facebook and Instagram and the website and the YouTube and Bandcamp and all these different platforms that music, Spotify, it, on and on, all the platforms that we're supposed to have these days. Everybody, I know farmers have to do it too. So we're out there and, we love to meet new people. And if you're not in, you know, sometimes we do some little tours. We'll probably be heading back to Atlanta this year. And a few of us might be going to Sicily in June. So we do make like appearances here and there and in different locations. So we love to meet new people. If anybody from the Sheep Show makes it to a Dust Bowl Fairies show, please come and say hello and tell us that you're from the Sheep Show, because that would just be the best.
They would be just going for making a direct line for Hazel, so you'll know them.
Anybody who comes can have a photo with Hazel, we promise.
Bonus! Sheep Show podcast listeners, you get a photo opportunity with Hazel if you rock up on the 30th of March to the Dust Bowl Fairies gig in Woodstock. How good is that? I love it. Love it. I love it.
Oh, Hazel's great. Hashtag the Ram. So if you want to do a little search on Hazel, you can see all kinds of our photos of Hazel in various different places.
That's so good.
Including Amtrak train and walking down the street of New York City and things like that.
Now that is some serious animal advocacy. I love it. That's so, so good. That's so, so good. Well, maybe we might finish on that too. So when you think about it, you know, if there were things, messages that you can send to listeners of the Sheep Show podcast who are obviously animal advocates, but what else do you think we can do to improve our environment, animal welfare worldwide? What's some ideas, suggestions? What are your hopes, I suppose? Liz, what about you?
I really think that one of the, you know, I guess the good news is that there are things that we can do that will particularly reducing our greenhouse gas emissions that will have beneficial effects in many, many ways. So, you know, not only do we have a climate crisis right now, but we have a biodiversity crisis, and we're in the midst of the sixth great extinction. And so anything that we can do to both personally and societally reduce our fossil fuel use and increase our sustainability in the way and reduce our consumption, honestly, will have a ripple effect that will benefit animals, from domestic animals to animals in the ocean, to animals in the desert, and to people, to us as well. And so I feel very passionately that everything that we can do to try to solve the climate crisis is one of the most important things we can do for living beings on the planet.
Thanks, Liz. Ryder, for you?
Well, definitely everything that Liz says, I second that. I also just, you know, as a consumer, I definitely try to get all of my like products to be eco as much as possible. And I check things, trying to get things that are specifically not tested on animals or cruelty free, because, you know, the animal testing industry is it's huge, and it's pretty upsetting. If you think about all those animals trapped in cages, getting all kinds of horrible things done to them. So, you know, like cosmetics and cleaning products and a lot of things, you know, just check the labels and see if they're cruelty free. I think it's really important. And because it's all the whole market, you know, it's a what do you call it? Demand based market. Demand. So mm-hmm. we mm-hmm. not only are we not, you know, using products that are tested on animals, but you know, if people don't want to buy things that are tested on animals, if people are buying products that are cruelty free, then the, you know, industry is going to move in that direction. So feel pretty passionate about that and just creating as little waste as possible and really cutting down on plastics and trying to, you know, compost and, you know, just be aware of our everything that we're using, the materials that we're using in our everyday life. And I mean, nobody's perfect and it's mm-hmm. hard. But I think the awareness is the most important thing. You know, it's like hard to suddenly not use any plastic. If you think about all the plastic that we all use every day, including just like, you know, animal feed and buckets and all these things, they're all plastic and they're not going to decompose for a really long time. But I don't know. I think just the awareness and just making efforts to cut back and use natural, you know, materials and products is really important.
Right. Stop. Thank you.
And, you know, just chemicals to anything that can go back into the earth and poison the water. Pesticides.
Yeah, it has an impact. It all has an impact. Yeah, for sure. Wonderful stuff. Well, thank you so much, both of you. It's been lovely chatting. I'm sure the listeners have really enjoyed the Sheep Show podcast episode with a little bit of a different slant. And hopefully I've introduced the listeners to, if they don't know you already, to a new way of being inspired, I suppose, because you're definitely very inspiring the way you've taken your animal lens and now it's inspiring you to create music and perform. So thank you very, very much.
Thank you so much for having us. It's such a honor to be on Sheep Show.
That's right.
Yes, thank you very much. It's great to meet you.
Thanks, Liz. Thank you so much. A fellow sheep breeder. That's exactly it. That's been lovely. And I've never, been nice to just share the Icelandic sheep with the breeders too. So they're the warts and all of the Icelandic breed. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Sheep Show podcast. Please take a moment to share this episode via your podcast app, email, or social media channels. Each share helps us reach listeners just like you who can benefit from our sheep-focused content. Let me know how your sheep journey is going. Contact me via Instagram at Holston Valley Farm or via email, jill@holstonvalleyfarm.com.au. Until next time, sheep well.